On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
A huge long weekend episode of The Big Fish. Park yourself down, drop a line, and let's get a bite. First up, tangling with a great fisho who's also doing wonderful things for the environment. That's our first cast with David Witham from Ausfish Unlimited. David Witham from Ausfish Unlimited, Central Coast Chapter. Welcome back to The Big Fish.
Hey, Scott. Good to be with you and thanks for having me.
Always good to talk to you, Dave. Very fine fly fisherman, very fine light estuary gear fisherman. Does all the stuff that I love doing as well. And look, you're a champion bloke, but you're also now a champion when it comes to litter. What's the story?
Yeah, so we've been putting litter prevention champions in as many of the chapters in New South Wales as we can, and I've been nominated to take on that role for the Central Coast. So we're starting to do a bit of planning and a bit of work around litter prevention, especially from a fishing perspective.
We'll talk about that in just a moment because some really exciting things already happening, and this will be replicated right across the state and right across the country where Ausfish Unlimited, the not-for-profit habitat restoration fishing group, operate. But first up, the local government region has done very well out of an initiative, Carp to Croc, and the local mayor has been seen feeding a giant reptilian about 18 feet long that weighs about 2 tonnes with noxious carp. What's the story, David?
Yeah, so that's the annual Carp to Croc. So this is the second year we've run it, and you know, it was even bigger and better this year. We had about 150 competitors and 456 carp caught across the 3 weeks. And yes, the carp, or the majority of them, I think just under 200 of them, went to the reptile park to feed the crocodiles. So, you know, the mayor was there to do his bit and fed Elvis, and I joined him for that as well, which was quite an interesting...
We're hanging onto his mayoral robes there, David. We wouldn't want...
Councillor
McKinnon to tumble in. That thing is aggro.
It is, and it is a big animal when you're standing, you know, a couple of feet away from its jaws, I can tell you now. And even Laurie McKinnon said that his heart started racing pretty quick. So that was a good experience. But yes, overall, a really good program this year. And interestingly, the average size of carp has started coming down year to year. So I'm hoping that's a reflection of the fact that as we're starting to take some of the bigger ones out, the population's getting smaller and smaller. So,
do you think it'll also put a spotlight on the coast about this problem? Because we speak about it so often west of the divide. We were talking about the Sofala carp muster just the other day to get them out of the beautiful Turon River. You fly fish there, you know how gorgeous it is and crystal clear and how the carp are so insidious. But Starlo and many of the other very eloquent speakers in the fishing fraternity are asking the question of the federal government as to why that virus can't be let go. There's been a lot of science done, and many are saying that it points towards it being something that could be done. You know, could be a game changer. Any opinion on that?
Yeah, look, you see a lot of arguments to and for, you know, why they should, why they shouldn't. A lot of people say if we introduce the virus, we're going to end up with all these black water events because of the rotting carp and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's a matter of how they plan it. If they do it in stages, don't release the virus everywhere all at once, I think it would definitely be a useful thing. I think they've got to do something. You know, 90% of the fish in the Murray-Darling Basin now are carp, you know, which they've really impacted on the native fish population in a lot of that area. And people are, you know, as you said, surprised that there's actually carp here on the Central Coast. But, you know, looking at the results from the competition, places like Moonee Creek in the upper reaches have carp in it now, and Piles Creek have carp in it, and the various lagoons up around Widalba and even the Wyong River has quite a big population of carp now. So it's not just a west of the divide issue. It's definitely a whole of Australia issue.
And maybe that will get the numbers to support the initiative to eradicate the carp, because really it's quite sparsely populated. About 90% of our population live along the coastal strip of the east and southeast coast. And whether you're on the mid-north coast or the north coast or the south coast or the central coast or the Sydney basin, these things are booming after some wet years. And I think maybe that sort of awareness that you're generating might do the trick. And did the big crocodile Elvis, who's a monster of a beast, an absolute leviathan, did he chomp down the carp?
He certainly did. He knocked off three in quick succession. But it's interesting talking to the keepers up there that, you know, that nearly 200 carp in the freezer will feed Elvis and the alligators for as much as 6 months.
Well, they go a bit dormant through the winter, don't they?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, they don't feed much at all during winter.
The opposite of us.
During summer.
Opposite of us, Dave, around the fire, having a little bit too much to drink and too much to eat. It's the Big Fish, and with us, David Witham, who's with Ozfish Unlimited, a great charity, a great not-for-profit looking after our fishing habitat and our fisheries, because, as they say, habitat makes fish happen is one of their mottos. And these tangler bins are something that community groups and bird lovers and lovers of turtles and everyone is crying out for. I believe you've started to initiate the tangler bin program.
Yeah, so on the Central Coast, we've installed some down at Pearl Beach, along with the Pearl Beach Progress Association. So they're in, you know, along the rocks there at Pearl Beach. As you come off the rocks, you'll see a tangle bin sitting there now and in a couple of other spots.
Not a bad Ludric spot, David. Bad Ludric spot at all. I've fished there with old Muddy Waters and a few of the other fellas in the fly club. And, when they school up there, it's a nice little platform, reasonably protected in Broken Bay.
Yeah, and you can also get your bait out of the pool there sometimes. So,
yeah, you can get your green weed along the edge or fly fish for them, as we're going to talk about later on in the program, because that's very effective, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. It's really a good method of fishing for Ludric, and you don't have to go and gather the bait beforehand.
Absolutely. So these tangler bins, a lot of people crying out for them, but there are specific circumstances that need to be in place.
Okay, so the main issue is, it's easy enough to put the tangle bins up, and a lot of the councils are happy for us to do that. The issue is emptying and maintaining them. So quite often when we're doing them, we need a community group or a group of people that are willing to and able to empty them. And it's not a matter of emptying them and throwing the stuff into the bin, because it's actually recycled. So the lining goes in there, gets separated into monofluorocarbon and braid, and is then recycled. So it's a matter of where we've got volunteers or fishing clubs that are willing to maintain and empty these bins, sort it, and then send the contents off to be recycled.
Very important when you're fishing to bundle up your mono or your braid when you get a tangle, and pop it in your pocket, but then make sure to take it out, because it can wreck the washing machine, as I've found at my place on a number of occasions.
You'd be popular.
I've been in big trouble with the family when I've tangled up all the gizmo in the agitator in the washing machine. It makes the family very agitated, David.
I'm sure.
It does. But the braid, it can be insidious stuff in the environment, can't it? It can be particularly damaging to turtles when it's in a big tangled bunch. It's like a snare, and it can cut through their flippers and really cause problems.
And I've seen a few photos recently of pelicans up at the entrance that have been caught in braid and really large gashes through their legs. So it's very important not to throw it in the water. And if we're going to install some tangle bins up the entrance this year, use the tangle bins. And don't even put it in the council rubbish bin, because quite often it blows out.
It's a brilliant initiative. Bring it on. And that's why you need more volunteers. And I guess that's why you're raising funds as well, because you need to buy all of these things, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's as you said, it's a not-for-profit charity. So anything we do needs to be funded either through government grants or through donations. So to that end, this weekend is what we call Small Change for Big Change. And in your local BCF, they'll be taking donations all weekend. So if you're anywhere near one, please call in and throw in some cash.
And Dave, what's biting, mate? I hear that the spawn run has been pretty good this year. Of course, we've got to talk about that as well. It's the end of the trout season officially in the rivers. Of course, you can still fish in many of the lakes and impoundments, and some of them are actually winter fisheries. I think of Thompson's Creek Dam and places like that.
Yeah, Thompson's Creek Dam. I know there's been a number of pretty good fish caught out of there already. But yes, Danny, you convene. The spawn run is on, so no doubt the guys are getting down there and into that. Sometimes it's shoulder to shoulder, though, so got to pick your times.
You know, I've got a bit of a foray into the Central West this weekend with Peachy. He's going to show me the ropes when it comes to Czech or Euro nymphing, which is all the rage. I know you love your fly fishing. What about saltwater fly? What are your target at this time of year?
Pretty much brim or luderick, as you alluded to earlier. Yeah, there's been some really good brim caught on fly out of Tuggera Lakes recently, so definitely worth having a go with your gotchas and your crazy Charlies.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, you've absolutely preempted our next chat, which is the one and only Brett from BWC, the great fly designer, who is going to talk about catching brim on fly. You're in the loop. He's been catching some beauties, and the secret is white dumbbell eyes.
Yeah, it's funny how you get these little trigger points on flies, and that's one of them.
Good luck, Dave.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for your time.
David Witham there from Ausfish Unlimited on the Big Fish. Up next on the Big Fish, Brett Clark has the latest and hottest fly design for catching brim.
The Big Fish on ABC Radio.
And we're in the fly tying lair of Brett and Cherie at BWC. And he's at the vise. And the latest thing in saltwater fly fishing and freshwater fly fishing are articulated flies. Articulated flies. I have a bit of trouble articulating at this time of the morning, Brett, but gee, they look really, really lifelike. How are they working? What's the mechanics behind them? Because they look like a fish or a shrimp or a squid in the water.
Yeah, all sorts of things these things look like. So they are built on a series of shanks. So anything from, I think the smallest is 6 mil long through to 80 mil long, and they're linked together. So what they get once when the fly's being pulled through the water, they swim side to side, almost like a hard body lure.
I've used the Puglisi fly for kingfish. Extraordinary how attracted the kingies are to them. Yeah. For very little action, I was out with Steve Gaynor on the fly boat, threw it down on a fast sinking line, and he said, just leave it there, mate. Bang. Yeah. All of a sudden, the line's being ripped out of my hand. I mean, if you've fought a kingie on fly rod, there's no going back. It's the greatest experience, isn't it? But they must just have so much natural action that you don't have to do too much.
Yeah, that's what it's about, I suppose. It's imparting that really lifelike, that natural type action into a fly. So a lot of weighted flies have an up and down type action, let's say, whereas the articulated type patterns have a swim bait or a side to side.
A wiggle
action. Yeah, side to side. So the way that the water flows over the flies gets that lightweight tail to swing side to side. So we carry these everything from, micro size 2-inch little minnows.
Well, they'd be good on flathead, wouldn't they?
Great on brim.
Yeah.
Some of my killer sessions have been on these 2-inch micro changes from the chocolate factory on brim.
Wow, and they've got really lovely sparkly material through the dubbing and then a little tail that really goes to town. And how do you fish those? On a floating line?
When the fish are – when the brim in particular are high up in the water column, I do fish them on a floating line. But you could fish them on any line. You could fish them on an intermediate line. You could fish them on a fast sink. So it just depends on whereabouts you want that fly to go. Select the right fly line, send the fly down and strip it, and that would work perfectly.
What's the retrieve, Brett?
Typically, I like to put in a long draw, 30 to 40, maybe 50 centimetres, maybe a bit of a pause in there.
And not wiggling the tip of the rod, they just have the natural action to fly?
They just have the natural action. Mm. You know, a couple of short, you know, mix in a couple of short strips in amongst there as well. Just get it to really dance through the water, you know, but use the ability of it to swing side to side to get that action.
So. A lot of fishing is faith in what you've got out there too, isn't it? If you're using a live bait, you really have faith in that wriggling beach worm in the gutter. You really have faith in that nipper that's jumping around in front of the whiting or the brim. Yeah, exactly. And it's the same with lures and flies, isn't it? I guess when you see these things with such a great action, you feel confident.
Correct. Yeah, 100% you do. And fly fishing, I suppose, it is a, you know, it's very much a confidence type.
Because it's harder. It's harder.
You know, I'm not going to stand here or sit here and say that it's easy. It's not easy. You've got to
put a lot. But it's so much more rewarding.
But it's fun. Yeah, it is rewarding. If you tie your own flies, there's that element of extra achievement as well. But yeah, it's fun. You can catch everything on fly. We love it.
And it's a worldwide thing, isn't it? Ideas like these articulated flies, they're coming out of America, but there'll be Aussies or even yourself at the bench when you're mucking around that'll come up with something that really works, won't there? There'll be variations of this. It's a really great creative pastime fly tying too.
Oh, it certainly is. And I suppose Blaine Chocolate from the US, he was really the innovator of the articulated fly, let's say. You know, and you're right, we get a lot of customers in who are buying components or buying hooks or shanks or bits and pieces and the materials to build their own articulated creations, and it's actually quite consuming. Once you kind of see the angler start to, you know, sort of engage their mind and come up with ideas and, you know, what they actually want to build, it becomes quite sort of encompassing, I suppose. They become a bit obsessed.
It's the Big Fish with Brett from BWC Flies, and he's just taken a bit of time off the bench. Actually, he's taking a few photos of some of these articulated flies, which are all the rage at the moment. And the Murray cod, I believe, love them too, and the trout cod and the yellow belly.
Yeah, any of those predator type fish, you know, you can certainly fish any of these type of flies for. So we kind of mentioned kingfish before on squid patterns, and they're really reliable. Brim, you know, the flathead, love them. Estuary perch, bass, golden perch, you know, really like the little minnow type changes as well. And we've just brought in some 8-inch jerk shads, so they're kind
of... They remind me of those big white sluggos. Yeah. That for some reason the kingfish just smash in pit water and Botany Bay and many of our inshore fisheries. This is like the fly version of that, only so much lighter.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's a replica of that exact concept that the conventional guys use, and it's so effective that you know, that the fly guys also want to replicate that. You know, so there's everyone learns a little bit from one another. It's almost like the fly guys learn a lot from the lure guys, and the lure guys learn a lot from the fly guys. So
I think in some ways, though, it's easier to experiment with flies and materials. I mean, you can find stuff around the house you can try. I mean, it may not work, but and you've got to go out and test it too, haven't you? You really got to see, well, it's got to be aerodynamic first, and it's got to have an action, and it's got to attract the fish. I mean, it might attract you, but until you put it in front of a fish, you don't know, I guess.
Yeah, and I suppose that's part of, you know, tying them or creating them yourself. And part of it is, you know, that journey of making sure that they swim properly or they sit correctly in the water and that the fish respond to them. They don't always have to look pretty. You know, some of the ugliest flies catch the most fish. So,
yeah. They've got to cast too. They've got to be aerodynamic. I mean, if they cast like a brick, you can't present it. It might be the greatest fly in the world. Might as well throw it on conventional tackle with some split shot. Yep. What about Puglisi, a great innovator? Those squid flies that he created, the kingies just love them,
yep.
And yet they don't, to me, look that much like a squid. but in the water, they seem to... And they're the most discerning of fish, those Sydney Harbour Kings, but they love those.
Yeah, they love these Puglisi squid. Articulated shank, big eye is kind of the winner on this kind of thing. And they don't look much in the packet, but in the water they just come to life. Mm. And kingies just crawl all over them.
So. They do. And look, they don't cast great, but you don't have to cast them far on a fast-sinking line. Just lob it over the side and let it sink down below the boat.
Yep.
And it's amazing how often they grab it, isn't it? It's almost like cheating.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, sink them down on, you know, one of those sink seven, sink eight type lines, you know, target those channel markers or those marker buoys with the big chains wrapped around underneath the yachts and boats and, you know, down in Sydney Harbour, the drop-offs of the ledges and so forth. And really, once you hook one, it's, you know, it's like pulling the plug out of the ocean. They're pretty, they're pretty aggressive fish.
It's the Big Fish, and we're speaking with Brett Fly Tyer here at Tugra, and Cherie there. They're a dynamic duo. Love their fishing. You've had some great fun on the brim with these articulated flies and other flies. I guess there are lots of good flies that work on brim. What are your techniques there? What have you been up to?
Articulated flies, like the little micro game changers in the 2-inch, they're always, you know, they're always something that we throw at the brim.
Buggers and things like that.
Yeah, that sort of stuff.
But they get used to flies' brim too, don't they? They're pretty smart. You need a bit of a change up every now and then.
Yeah, we're currently having some really good success on the brim, and you know, really the dominant feature of our flies at the moment is a white lead dumbbell eye.
Oh, yeah.
And without that, it seems like we can't catch them. So, you know, is it the white dumbbell eye or is it the confidence thing? I don't know. We're putting a lot of flies through them and they don't seem to be as responsive. And then as soon as we put that white dumbbell feature back on, they seem to crawl all over it. So there's definitely something in that.
Wow, that's interesting, isn't it? The white dumbbell eye. So I reckon a few people would be getting out the the Tippex or the white paint.
Yeah, a bit of white paint. I've tied a few lately, so they're definitely working. So
on the sand flats, around the weed beds?
Around the weed beds. You know, we're sort of in that 2 metres-ish kind of water depth. 2 metres down to sort of 1.5. Just fishing, you know, weed bed type structure, really. You know, we're fishing the local lake and that's what it's all about. So there's plenty of fish there at the moment.
And Morsi's whiting fly, Sheree said she caught so many whiting, she got RSI.
Yeah.
But it's a great surface brim fly. Yeah. It's just as good as a brim fly as a whiting fly, I think.
Oh, it's a great brim fly as well. You just change the retrieve. So instead of keeping it moving for the whiting, you really just incorporate a lot of pauses into the retrieve for the brim. And it's a great brim fly as well, yeah, 100%.
Really brilliant for all of those coastal lagoons and colas from the south coast all the way up through the mid-north coast to the north coast and the central coast and Sydney, places like Narrabeen Lake. Just give it a go. It's amazing and a very simple fly to fish. 6 weight, floating line. You can use your trout gear, can't you?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, just wash it down. You know, if you're using some freshwater orientated gear, just make sure you maintain it. But, yeah, we're kind of on the 7 weights these days for our whiting, and it's not the size of the fish or anything like that. It's more the ability to throw another 15 or 20 feet of fly line and keep that fly in the water for a longer period of time. So that's kind of where we're at the moment.
Well, Brett, you've got my casting arm absolutely twitching. I'm ready to get into it with a fly rod. There are plenty of other ways to catch fish, but fly fishing is just so much fun. Thanks for your time, mate.
You're welcome. Thanks so much, Scott. Really appreciate it.
Brett from BWC flies on the Big Fish here in his fly tying den or cave.
Brett Clark there, champion fly tyer. And coming up, we'll keep the fly fishing theme going because it's the end of the trout season on the streams. But you don't have to hang up the rod because the Ludric are coming on and we'll tell you all you need to know to set up to catch a hard-fighting blackfish. Also coming up, Stinker, he's seen something that he's never seen before. Mind-boggling stuff. A really big fish.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi. The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Hey, we had a few issues, technical issues last week, but your edition of the Big Fish Stinker Chat is up on the podcast now, so just type into a search engine, listen to the Big Fish on ABC Local Radio, or ABC Radio, and you'll find it there. And you had a cracking story about the rogue wave that nearly swamped you and your theories on rogue waves. You're a true believer, so people can check that out. And I think there is science to say that there probably is such a thing as a rogue wave, but you certainly saw one, didn't you?
Mate, I don't care if there's no science at all. Yeah, you don't need scientists to tell you the big wave coming. And it's a funny thing because I've only seen two. In all my time on the water, which is quite a bit, on two occasions, I saw a wave coming, and I was with a friend one time, I mentioned it the previous week, and I warned him, we're on the rocks, and I said to him, mate, I said, I don't want to startle you, but there's a big wave coming. So then we took appropriate action. Well, you know, it was a big wave. So that was one account. But the other one was just recently, actually last week, and I was out there when I shouldn't have been, Scott. why don't I learn?
Yeah.
What's wrong with me? I know I shouldn't have gone, but there I am. I've got my new motor. I'm all fired up, keen as mustard. Conditions aren't good. Conditions are miserable. I'm the only person on the beach, and there's a reason for that, because they're all a lot smarter than me. And out I went and anchored out in front of the lighthouse, and this fair dinkum humdinger, it was a big, big wave. And it really pulled tight on my anchor rope and lifted my anchor, but it broke probably 30 metres away from me on the reef. But I just, like, well, I think I better go home.
Yes, that's King Neptune's way of saying, Stinky, you're out of your depth. You're out in the wilds.
Scott, it takes a bit to sort of startle me these days. Stories, you know, people tell me stories and people send me photos. And, you know, and they're sort of, I've heard most of them, I've seen most of them, but occasionally something arrives on my desk when I go, wow, this is really something. And that happened to me in the middle of the week when I was having a few beers down at the local tavern, which I really do enjoy. And the phone goes, and one of the commercial fishermen said that they were hauling mullet, and he caught an extraordinary fish, and a fish that I have never seen before.
What was it?
Well,
a giant mullet?
No, I've seen some of them too. They actually come later at the end of a mullet run. The last schools in a mullet run produce mullet up to 4 and 5 kilo mullet. That's at the end, the last, and we're getting close to that now here in Fingal Bay. But what it was and what made me take a gulp of my beer was a huge tailor like I have never seen before.
Wow. So any guesstimates? I mean, what did it look like?
Well, it looked like a thumping great tailor. How big is a big a record? What's a record?
Well, the all tackle world record for a tailor is 14.4 kilos, which is 31 pound 12 ounces. It's caught by James Hussey off the coast of North Carolina in 1972.
Yes, well, this one I could only estimate, but I reckon it's gone well over 10 kilos. That's what I reckon. And the commercial fisherman who caught it, he agrees. He said, yep, that's what he picked it for too. So it's like a mulloway. It's like a mulloway. But you've got to look closely, and it's a tailor. Oh, dear me. It's amazing. You know, you don't know what's out there. Mulloway, when I used to fish for mulloway, and the best one I ever got was close to 80 pounds, and it was a big fish. But I haven't seen one like that for a long time. But I did hear that some years ago, long before I started fishing, that they would catch them around the Stockton Bridge up to 100 pounds. That's a mulloway.
Yeah, yeah, not a tailor, no.
That's a big fish. That's a big fish.
That is a big fish, yeah. And look, with the tailor, to the longest one was 114 centimetres caught in Western Australia. It was about 17 or 18 pounds. And a bloke in St George's Basin caught the New South Wales record, 17.2 pounds. And I think what happens sometimes too is after we have rains, these tailor get caught in these lakes and inlets and up rivers and things, and they just eat everything. And then all of a sudden they get to run to sea and they've gorged so much that they grow to, they'll just grow as much as they can eat. They're not, if they're not getting much food, they'll stay small. If they're getting a limitless supply of tucker, they just grow and grow and grow. So they'll go well over a metre, which is extraordinary.
Well, what you're talking is 17 pounds. Well, I'm looking at this fish and I reckon it's 20 pounds. I reckon if it's 20 pounds if it's an ounce. And this commercial fisherman, he's four generations of commercial fishermen, and they all agree that, yeah, so it's good to know that there are fish out there like that. But like you say, fish that eat a lot and don't move very much and stay in, particularly in impoundments, if they can't get out and all they do all day is eat, and just lays around the joint, and nothing makes them swim fast because they don't have any predators. So all they do is grow and grow and grow. And this goes back to another story I was told by an old bloke, a mate of mine. I mentioned this on the program some years ago, and he worked in the water board, and he loved fishing. Billy Croft was his name. He's passed quite a few years ago. And he told me, and he said, Inkham, this bloke, he told me that in Grahamstown Dam, and that's between Nelson Bay and Raymond Terrace in Port Stephens, he had access to that. You can't go fishing in there. Fishing's illegal in the Grahamstown Dam. But it's chock-a-block full of eels. He reckons there's a bass in there. You can walk on the bass. But he set a net. He set a net in the dark. He went and walked through the bushes, highly illegal. Probably would have lost his job if he got caught. But anyway, he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. But he set a gill net overnight, and then he pulled it in the next morning, and he had, among other things, all sorts of creatures, but he had a 23-pound mullet.
Unreal. Unreal. It shows you that the spawning is the problem with a lot of these species too. If they're restricted from spawning, they just grow and grow and grow. You know, they obviously use a lot of energy and that's a time when they're vulnerable, you know, to being caught and whatnot. But if they're locked up somewhere and just fed forever, then they just grow forever.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, you know, and it reflects on humans too. If we don't do enough exercise, we do too much eating, well, there's only one result. But finally, or another one, now I think back about it, another bloke called Jimmy Chalkley, but he's passed as well. But he told, I asked him, I said, what's the biggest ludric you've ever come across, Jimmy? And Jimmy's a commercial fisherman. And he said to me, well, he said, I'll tell you what. He said, up near Bungwall. Now, Bungwall's at the back of the Myall Lakes. And it's very still. The water up there is very still. And he said there's a stuff up there called possum grass or possum weed. I can't quite remember what he said, but it was like green hair. It was very, very fine. And so you couldn't actually fish in it. It's a weed, a seaweed. And these massive ludric would swim in amongst this stuff. And you couldn't catch them and you couldn't net them either because they're all in this weed. But one or two strayed outside and he caught them on the gill net. And he said they were around about 4 kilo. Now, 4 kilo ludric. And it's because it just lives up there and all it does all day is eat.
Eat. Yeah, that's amazing. And here's something from Victorian Fisheries Authority that really backs up what your commercial mate saying and what you both estimated that fish to be, because this is very interesting. So they're very old fish, 10 plus year old fish. Your average tailor lives to about 2 or 3 years of age, but your 10 plus year old fish, and they can live to 10 years and beyond, are extremely rare jumbo fish that can exceed 1 meter in length and weigh over 10 kilos.
10 kilo, yeah. Well, that's what it is. That's what it was. It's well over a metre long. I just sat there and I thought, well, with AI and all this trick photography and this nonsense that goes on, makes you question it. But I can tell you now, it's fair dinkum.
That's the greenback monster.
The greenback monster. That's what it was. But I can't get out amongst them until this sea settles down. When I look out into the ocean, Scott, and I see white caps, that's it for me. I can't go out into the ocean if there's white caps, because a white cap to a little 11-foot tinny is very, very uncomfortable.
It is. Hey, can you get photographic evidence to me of that? And I'll put it up on the podcast page and people can see it for themselves, and we can get them to estimate what they reckon it is, because those commercial fishermen, they've seen everything. They don't brag about anything. They've seen all the big fish.
They got no reason to brag, but they know that that I'm interested.
Yeah, and they'd be good at weights too. They'd be good at knowing the weights of things.
Oh yeah, well I mean that's their business, you know. If you want to know anything about fish, you go and talk to commercial fishermen. Yeah. If you want to know anything about building a house, you go and talk to a builder.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
That's what you do. It just amazes me. But I thought nothing amazed me after a while. I said, oh, no, nothing. I've seen everything. Well, I haven't.
Well, Stinker, you're putting doing exactly what we say we do on the tin. When it comes to the name of this show, it's called The Big Fish. So we're talking about the biggest tailor ever possibly seen, and we'll put a photo up next week on the podcast. Check it out. And for last week's episode too, have a listen to that, because Stinker told some pretty good tales, as he always does. Hey, tight lines, mate.
Hurry, Scott.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
It's The Big Fish, and you don't have to travel to Montana to tackle hard-fighting fish on fly. Just about every estuary, every rock wall, every bay near you has an option where you can fly fish for a really great hard-fighting fish that's good on the table too. Stephen Gaynor is a real advocate of fly fishing for ludric and loves it. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Scott. How are you, buddy?
Not too bad at all, flyboat skipper. The weather's been a bit wild, but the bit of colour actually gets the blackfish going. They get down, don't they?
Not bad. It's not bad. It's getting all that weed, bashing it off the rocks. The water temperature's dropping at the same time, so they're going to get, you know, feed up, get ready to spawn. It's exactly what we need, really.
Gee, they're in good numbers in your backyard. They're just fantastic. What sort of gear, first of all, if people want to have a crack? Because I would be thinking that your standard 6-weight fly rod, standard 6-weight floating line, standard tapered leader, the weed flies are just so easy to tie or buy. Yeah, yeah. Even the bait fishermen are using them. And that's an indicator, maybe a bit of greasy wool, or buy a better one if you want to. But I like greasy wool. You just loop knot it onto the line, and that's it. Would that just be it? Is that enough?
Mate, that's exactly. That's all you need. Just keep it simple. The KISS method, you know. Maybe a little bit of split shot, you know, because I prefer to have a bit of split shot a little bit up the line than a weighted fly, just for that little bit more natural movement. But, yeah, it's super simple. And that's it.
That's it. And if it's really deep, I guess you can just use the end of the fly line as an indicator. Watch it for it to dip.
Oh, yeah, look, I personally just love watching an indicator. Look, I've said it before. It's scientifically proven to be mentally good for you, staring at an indicator for half an hour. So, no, it is. Like, it's legitimately, it clears the mind. You just stare at it, wait for it to go down, and then it's like, do I strike on the little down? Do I strike on the big down? But then you know, when you see that blackfish in the corner of your eye, there's something about a blackfish that's about to eat, you pick it straight away. Bang, down, you're on.
Yeah, it really is a zen-like pursuit, isn't it? And it's great for your reflexes as well, and great for your focus, isn't it? Because nothing else in the world exists, that little orange piece of wool on the surface.
Exactly.
That's your whole universe.
Well, you know, but there's other things, like you're thinking about, it's just like trout fishing. You're thinking about the drift. Is there any drag on that drift? Is the wind pulling on the fly line? You know, is it starting to swing up? Is it going too slow? Am I in the zone? So it's not like you're completely blank, but it is meditative, so it's good for you. So you should be allowed to go fishing for blackfish whenever you want.
Oh, yeah, and I love them to eat. It take the skin off and a nice boneless fillet. They're a really good white fillet of fish, and in huge numbers, Steve. I think that's the beauty. You're not depleting any resource. It's a very sustainable thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, mate. There's absolutely no impact on the fish, you know, for recreational people.
In those still estuaries, though, they're a real challenge there. I think that's where bait might be king. But if there's a bit of rock and roll, a bit of wash, a bit of run, then definitely the flies will work every time.
Look, Scott, you're right. Look, bait in that dead calm water is always going to help. But I think you've just got a burley. You know, burley's what sort of tops it for me. And then, you know, some of the burley we're using is as good as the most quality bait you'll ever find. So, you know, especially after these rains, start walking the drains, look for your weed, guard it with your life, and chop it up, mix it with sand. And that's what I use for those, you know, tough situations where there's very little movement in the water. But, you know, some of them can be really, really good spots as well.
Do you match the color of your material in the fly to the weed that you've collected?
I do and I don't. Look, I'm a creature of habit, to be honest. I've got my particular product that I use that's a really, really, really good product. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention it on air, but you know, I stick with what I know, with what gives me confidence, and I find that's more important than everything.
Yeah, most of the flies that I've tied are not with a darker green, with a sort of a lighter green that could be the color of cabbage as well.
Exactly.
You know, that's the one that seems to work for me. I can't remember.
That Permit Green, that's the one I go for.
What's it called?
Oh, well, I don't know. I just call it Kermit Green.
Kermit Green, yeah. It's sort of a more kelpy green than a dark weed green, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not into that dark weed green colour. And as I said, like, what you said, they'll eat the weed and they'll eat the cabbage. Like, you can use the same fly. Now, I guess with burling, you've got to be careful not to burley up too much. You can overfeed them.
And you don't want it to take them away either. You want to make sure that the weed and the sand is dropping down where you're putting your fly.
Yeah, but mate, like right now, it's the beginning of the season for them, so it should be, I don't know, I'm thinking it's going to be a good year.
Are you seeing them already?
Oh, yeah. There was, even in the Stillwater and Watson's Bay a few weeks ago, there would have been, I don't know, a few hundred right in on the shore, stirring it all up.
And they get really
heads down, tails up. And
they get really big in Sydney Harbour too, don't they? They're big oceanic blackfish. It's nothing to get, you know, all your fish over 30 centimetres. I mean, up in the creeks and rivers, sometimes they're a lot smaller than that. But these are big, robust, beautiful-looking, shiny blackfish, aren't they?
Oh, look, we're only after 40 centimetre fish. I don't know what you're talking about, 30s.
Yeah, that's right. Well, but you know,
and again, it's like trout. It's all about condition. You know, you can have a half metre long trout, but if it's in weak condition, it's nothing. Well, all these fish are solid, strong fish. They are you know, I've been taken to the back in on a 6 weight.
Yeah, why are they so fat and healthy in there? What are they? Is it just wee that they eat, or there's got to be some protein in there as well? I don't know.
No, they definitely become omnivores in winter. I remember back when I was younger, and I'd be watching all the guys with the black tissues and the weed, and I'd be stumped going, why can't I do that? What's going on? As soon as I went and pumped some nippers, bang, blackfish, blackfish, blackfish. So yeah. I know for a fact, like, my biggest blackfish I've ever caught was on a nipper.
Yeah, they love nippers and love worms too. They love worms.
Oh, exactly. But it's like anything, you know. There's nothing like getting one on a nice weed fly that you've tied yourself. You've watched the indicator drop down, or you haven't used an indicator, you're just staying in touch with it, and you know that almighty wallop they give you, bang, and the rod bounces, and you lift, and you're on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's even fun when you're on, and then you're off for a second, you know?
It's the big fish. We're speaking with Stephen Gaynor, who just loves targeting big Sydney Harbour blackfish on his fly rod with weed flies and a bit of sand and a bit of chopped weed for burley, sound pigs, and all around the rock washes. It's a great place when you find a little bit of that washy water and you see those blackfish flashing there. Right, you can get them right under the sails of the Opera House. I saw one of the best schools of blackfish.
Man of War Wharf
is just an amazing place. You can stand there and watch them for ages, and they're in such big numbers. And as you say, they fight like billy-o. They really do give you a really good run for the money. It's so addictive, and they will grab that fly. And I think if someone wants to learn how to tie flies, this is the easiest fly in the world to tie. Is there any technique that people should worry about, or you just lash it on?
Look, I there is a little bit of technique, obviously. I like to cover the hook as much as possible, but still having. So I like a Gamagatsu pan hook. I'll tie two bundles on. I'll tie a little bit on the right at the shank of the hook, and then another one just before the eye of the hook. So it sort of covers everything kind of neatly. I'll always tie them oversized so that when I get on the day, whenever I'm using them, I can trim it as needed. I think that's vital important. You know, some days, it's like anything, they'll either be interested in a big bait or a little bait. So I try to just be aware of that and, you know, mitigate it.
Size 10 hook, what's your favourite hook size?
I'm using size 4 pan hooks. So there's a little green Gamagatsu one.
Oh, yeah, the green weed hook. And do you use a little bit of Velcro to tease out the material?
I do. Generally, my little one's comb. Depends what's around, just what I've stolen at the time. But, they're not, you know, you don't have to be too technical. You don't need the gear. Just tie on a bit of weed and throw it out there. You know, we really overthink a lot of stuff. So even with the trout, we overthink it, mate. When they're hungry, they're going to eat.
Yeah. And I think the thing about Ludric flies or weed flies now is because so many of the bait fishermen have a dropper with one of those on as well as the bait, they're probably one of the few flies, unweighted flies, that just about everyone would see in every tackle shop.
Yeah. They're always next to the cash register. 100%. You're dead right. But you know why they're so effective? Because it's time in the water. Every time you get it down on a little bit of weed, you got to pick it back up, you got to put on a bit of weed, go again. Now, again, that was my other drawback when I was a kid fishing for Ludric. I couldn't put the weed on to save my life. With a weed fly, drop it in the water, gets down, lift, bugger, didn't get a hook up, bang, drop it down again. You are effectively fishing the whole time. And, you know, that's what fishing's all about, you know. When you got a bait or a lure or a fly in the water, you have a chance of catching fish. So,
That's right. They're not flying fish. That's such a good point, Stephen. And really, if you want to get weed to stay on a hook too, you've got to plait it on properly. You've got to measure it. You've got to, you know, plait it over itself and around the hook. There's a real technique. All the time you're doing that, you could have a green weed fly wafting down in front of their mouth and hooking a 40-centimetre Ludric. Hey, mate, it's just a fantastic way to fish. It really is. Grab some green weed flies. Even if you haven't got a fly rod, you can get a starter kit with a reel and a floating line for $100+.
Even on a spin rod, Scott, just, you know, put out a little bobby cork and just play around with it. It's not rocket science.
No.
It's a small little bit of split shot to get down and just get in there and try it. And the good thing about it, you've got numbers of fish, so you're going to have lots of opportunities.
Yep. If you're seeing those Ludric school up in the estuary near you or off the rocks near you, take care and get into it. Tight line, Steve. You've got us excited for the blackfish season. It's one
brilliant, Scott.
Very good reason to get excited around winter time.
Legend, mate. You have a great weekend.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.